KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. It's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Oh, good evening, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Lon.
My name's Ara.
And my name is Rich.
Now, you know what's strange? There's three human beings in this room, but Ara kind of looks like a zombie. Is there something going on right now, Ara?
I don't know, dude. I was walking around the other day, and I met this really strange guy dressed in this weird garb, and he was looking at me, and he said that I had something called porphyric hemophilia. I don't know. I've had it for about 3 days, and Rich's neck is looking mighty tasty right now.
You're not going to eat my brains, are you?
All right, so you're feeling a little sick, a little under the weather.
That's, yeah, a little bit. But you know, I'm a professional.
But we'll make it through the show.
So,
I wanted to update the site a little bit this week.
Like, nibble on that neck a little bit between the shows.
All right, so I wanted to update our website a little bit this week just to say that we were going to have a guest, because we've got Matt Barton. Supposedly later in the show.
That's fantastic. Maybe I can ask if he has what I have.
This is the goal, though, right? We're gonna have, so Matt Barton, you acquired this guest for us,
right? Well, he's a person. He's more than just an acquisition.
But I mean, you sought out.
I did indeed seek
this
him
guest.
Out. Yes,
and
this is true.
I didn't even know it was happening. I just got an email one day saying we're gonna have a guest, and he wrote a book. Is that right?
He absolutely wrote a book.
What's the book called?
And the book's called
Dungeons and Desktops.
All right, so
I'm holding it in my hands.
Dungeons and Desktops. I think it has something to do with the conversion of role-playing games from standard, you know, pen and paper to video games, computer RPGs.
Yeah, it's basically a history of computer RPGs. And I don't know. I thought it was really fascinating just because I've had, I think, a really interesting history myself.
Well, this is actually a really good point.
With the RPGs.
This, to me, is an interesting point in history to discuss this sort of thing with, you know, Matt, because, you know, he's discussing basically this transition from pen and paper to computerized role-playing games.
Right, and I think none of us have had experience in the actual pen and paper part of it. I don't know, maybe I'm making assumptions here.
I know I haven't.
Yeah.
You right? Just don't like RPGs at all, though.
Exactly. I don't play a lot of RPGs.
So like, you're a total non-RPG fan. I'm a kind of... I like certain RPGs very much, but other ones I have a great disdain for, and I don't even know how to characterize you, Rich.
I love RPGs.
But Rich loves
RPGs. I mean, there are bad RPG games, but I love RPGs.
I'm not necessarily into RPGs, but I am into the psychology of gaming. And RPGs are... There's a lot involved, because it's rare that you play a role-playing game, or at least it used to be, prior to the computerization of them. You wouldn't really play by yourself, right? It was a social gaming experience.
Originally, I think, yeah.
And then they turned it in the computer version to make it single player, so now all these people didn't have to have friends. They could play anyway. But now,
you have virtual friends.
Yeah. Well, not really. I mean, they used to be just one-player games. And now we're converting into the MMO from single player.
Yeah. Well, no, I meant like really virtual. Like.
Oh, truly.
Yes.
Not even just a friend on the other side of the world.
No,
you're
like,
fake.
You know, like, I don't know. I can't even remember the name of an old character, but yeah.
Okay.
But then, yes, now, as you're saying, with the advent of the MMOs, now you have these quasi-virtual friends, because they're real people, but you're playing the effing MMO all day long, and you never see them outside of the virtual world.
Exactly. So my point is, he discusses one type of transition from, you know, pen and paper, one medium to computer, and now we're going through another shift, not so much the medium, but just the intention of play, right? And this leads to a conversation that I had at work today. I actually started talking to someone who I guess is a big fan of the show. Like, I didn't know we were little celebrities.
But, apparently we are little celebrities.
Apparently we are, because...
And the New Times agrees.
Oh, we didn't even mention that.
We haven't had time yet.
The Phoenix New Times.
Woo!
If you go to phoenixnewtimes.com, that's .com, then you can read up about, you know, the award that we got, Best Video Game Gurus in Phoenix.
Because, like,
there's a lot of competition for video game gurus.
Who else candidates for that
Phoenix
award?
Listen, there's a lot of competition for the video game gurus.
Like, in Phoenix, like, was it like they heard the show and they're like, we got to make up an award?
Tip it.
Or was it like,
we
no,
won
it's
fair
awesome.
And square.
It's awesome.
In square.
I'm just wondering who our competitors are so we can find them and beat them up.
They've been sacked already.
It's not important. But if you get the magazine, if you're in the Phoenix area, it's really thick magazine. Yeah,
page 43.
Yeah. 53,
sorry.
And we're in there.
Way off.
Megalopolitan or
what,
something.
What, one digit?
Yeah. Anyway, you'll find us in there or search their website for us, and you'll see what they wrote about us. So thank you very much to the Phoenix New Times. But also, I had this conversation with someone who I didn't realize was a big fan of the show at work today. He came into my office and he said, "Hey, you're Lon from Chatterbox." I was like, "Yes, right?
Yes, 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 child. You may stand now."
Come, I said. And so, and he talked to me about, you know, his idea, some website he wants to put together. And right now, I think it's just a burgeoning idea in his head. And a lot of people have ideas and don't go through with them. But Kobe, I wish you luck. Maybe you'll put it together and do something useful with it. But we got into this discussion about how he really likes, you know, WoW, the World of Warcraft.
Ew.
As do, like, how many? 10, like 90 million?
10 plus million people.
Lots and lots of people, right? And like, it's funny because he...
6 billion people?
So at one point, he made the interesting point that I knew, right? But I never internalized this aspect of it or never really thought about the impact of the fact that the game is never ending. I'm sure I have in the past. For whatever reason, it clicked to me again.
Yes.
It's never ending, right? So that means you're constantly doing the same thing because they're not releasing a whole new game every time. So no matter what expansion pack you get, the gameplay is pretty much going to be the same.
Right.
Not to mention the fact that it is still the same game. So you're just doing the same thing over and over and over with no real end. And I need it. Like, to me, if I were to play that game,
yeah,
it would be like, get to level 70,
yeah,
teabag a few people that you kill,
right,
and that's it. That's your goal. That's the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I don't want to just go kill more dragons. Yay!
How do you teabag someone?
I don't know.
You crouch.
Yeah, you crouch.
No, I know in real life. I mean, in the MMO.
No, I'm saying...
In the MMO, they let you crouch.
You have to be level 70 to do this.
This would be my goal in the game.
Okay, gotcha.
You can teabag in WoW.
If I don't have a defined goal, then...
That's like the ultra hard skill that you get. The coming soon
like
in the expansion
skill.
Pack.
You can only do it once every 24 hours. It's like teabag, F6.
So... My point is, I need a defined goal, right? Even though I don't want good games to end, I want them to end, right? Because
yes.
I don't want to keep playing.
This, I hope, will lead us into some other discussions later on.
So,
with Matt.
But like, he apparently enjoys this. He's been playing for 3 years, and he was like, well, you know, sometimes you get a game and you play for 4 to 6 hours.
Do the same effing thing.
We were talking about that new Star Wars The Force Unleashed game, which you and I were talking about, Rich,
yep,
before the break or before we started tonight's show. And I was like, but I want a game that's just 4 to 6 hours. I mean, great, if it's a good game, give me 10 hours, give me 15.
Right.
But my point is, like, I want a game with a defined finish.
Well, sometimes, right?
Pretty much always.
Chess ends, but you play it over and over.
Well, no.
So in that sense, it doesn't end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, multiplayer-wise, you need to have an ending. Multiplayer-wise, you don't need to have an ending because you want to have that experience continually with people.
And they want to collect their monthly fee repeatedly.
It's like you go and play AO3, there's no end to the multiplayer game. You just keep fighting each other. That's like the whole
and
point.
Then, but like movies, want movies to end.
Yeah.
I wonder, what if they made a movie series and they're just like, all right, it's just not going to end.
They do.
Well, there's
it's
like
James
27 Bond movies. And they do the same thing with TV shows, though. Like, TV shows go on for like 12 seasons.
Yeah, but then the end.
My point is that, like, I identified a key difference between someone like Kobe, who likes this role-playing game,
right,
and I guess he somehow coaxed his wife into playing as well.
He never gets tired of it?
Apparently not, right? And then someone like him versus someone like myself, who would hate that. Right, and I've talked several times about how I feel like maybe I've grown out of gaming. Right, I've gotten too old and I don't like him anymore.
Right.
But then I always submit to the fact that no, I still do. I just need something new.
Right.
Right. And it's tough when you're, you know, almost 30 years old to find a new game, some new experience. But I told him, I said, that's what I'd rather, over the course of a year, instead of spending $15 a month for 12 months, spending $180, I'd rather buy 3 games that introduce a new experience to me each time, rather than just playing the same old game,
mm-hmm,
through and through and through.
This is true. And it's interesting that you bring that up because I've not in playing MMOs because I deliberately stop myself from really just playing MMOs in general. It's just like a moral policy that I have. But in other games that I've played, certain games like, I don't know, Disgaea 3, not 3, because I haven't played that yet, but the first two, and, you know, maybe the Elder Scrolls games.
Mm-hmm.
There's just this really, really weird sensation that I get after playing the game for a while that I'm totally fatigued and tired of it, and yet I just feel like I'm the crack whore that must have more of this.
Mm-hmm.
No, not me. But anyway, before we go to break here,
it's very troubling.
I want to say a couple things. First of all, to remind everyone, I'm going to be at E3, or not E3, E4All this weekend. I wouldn't go near E3. But anyway, I'll be at E4All this weekend with all games. And I set up a Twitter account. I haven't actually used it yet, but I set up a Twitter for my video game ramblings. I might use it. Cbox Along. Like Chatterbox Along, but Cbox Along on Twitter. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. All right, so we've got Matt Barton with us. Are you here, Matt?
He'll come on as soon as Norm brings him on. But before we do that,
he hasn't materialized quite yet.
Don't forget, before we bring on the guest, I got to remind everybody about UAT.
Because we love UAT so much.
Our wonderful sponsor, the University of Advancing Technology. Head over to uat.edu to learn more about the programs they have to offer in terms of education and learning to be a game programmer and designer and everything. And so now, yes, I'd like to bring on Matt Barton, author of Dungeons and Desktops. Matt, you're
on
the
air. Are you with us, Matt?
Oh, hi, guys. I'm here. Can you? Am I coming through okay?
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. I told Matt during the break that it's hard to hear the people who call in because the phone is always very quiet. And as much as I tell the radio station to crank it up,
yeah.
There's technology limitations, apparently, that I cannot control.
It's good. I can hear him absolutely fine. So.
All right. So Matt, obviously, we introduced you as the author of Dungeons and Desktops. First, I'm just going to ask you to give your own brief synopsis of what that book is and why you chose to write it.
It's a history of computer role-playing games. With a little bit of analysis in there as far as what makes that kind of a game different from other kinds of games and why people should play them. I guess the reason I wrote it is because it's the type of game I'm most familiar with. And I mean, what the heck, if you're going to write a book, you might as well write about something you know and like.
So you're definitely a gamer, right? But do you play other types of games, or are you pretty much a hardcore RPG enthusiast?
I play pretty much all kinds of games. But these are the ones that really, these are the games that really made me a gamer. I can remember back when I had a Commodore 64 computer. I'd play games like Archon.
Archon was awesome.
Remember that? I really loved those games, but it really wasn't until I played The Bard's Tale and The Pool of Radiance, if you remember those. And that's when I just really started to love computer games.
So now, one thing that we were discussing a little bit that I thought would be interesting before the show was we were kind of talking about what was the first computer role-playing game, or really just video or computer, that any of us played. So I think that probably, Matt, you'll have us beat. But just for sake of...
I don't know, man. He said a Bard's Tale. Does Wizard's Crown come before...
The Bard's Tale.
Does Wizard's Crown come before the Bard's Tale?
I don't even know what that is. What is that, Matt?
Wizard's Crown was... it was by the same guys that did A Pool of Radiance. It's a little bit before that.
Sweet! I win!
See, this is why we hang out with Matt, because you can just pull these questions out of thin air, and he has the answer. So what was the first computer role-playing game you ever played, Matt?
The first one I ever played?
Yeah.
Zork.
Let's see.
It's not Zork, dude.
It must have been... earliest one I can remember, I guess, is probably The Bard's Tale. I did remember seeing Ultima, and I remember there was I think my dad had a Dungeons and Dragons text adventure kind of game.
I was going to say, didn't the text adventure and the MUDs pretty much predate the graphical ones, like Azabelloth or whatever that British guy made, Lord British. I can't remember, I can't remember the name of the
he's
game.
He's spinning Lord in space, British. Lord British is right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Richard Garriott's first game.
Yeah.
I think he did that when he was something like 17 years old or real young. I don't know the, can't remember the exact age.
That's why the art was so impeccable.
He did that before he did Ultima.
Hey, it's impressive for a 17-year-old. I didn't do that.
The fact that he made a bunch of money out of it wasn't impressive.
Yeah, that's even more so.
It's sick. You know, you read about these guys, they're doing all these wonderful things when they're, you know, 19, 20 years old. I'm like, oh, what am I doing?
Yeah, I just found appendages on my body, apparently. Anyway, so what was the first RPG you played, Alon?
I never really play RPGs, but so. I remember, like, I played... it was probably Dragon Warrior for the NES.
Was there one? Was it like, because we know that you don't like them, were you turned off by your first exposure?
Well, like, I watched my brother play the ones on the PC. Like, I mentioned A Wizard's Crown, and he had a bunch of them. And we had the Zork trilogy and all that jazz.
And you just couldn't be less interested.
I guess not. But, I mean, I did play Dragon Warrior on the NES.
Yeah.
And I actually really enjoyed it.
That's a total RPG, dude.
It is absolutely RPG. I don't know what I liked about it, because now I look at those games and I think they're horribly boring. and Matt, I'm guessing you don't listen to a lot of our shows, but I'm not a huge RPG fanatic. Like I was saying before you came on, actually, I'm interested in the psychology of games, and so I'm interested to hear how the transition from paper and pen, which is a group experience, to a single-player computer game experience, how that transition might have affected gamers, but... I never really play a lot of RPGs, but I did play Dragon Warrior, and I tried to play Ultima on the NES, and it didn't do it for me. Like, Dragon Warrior had me sucked in for some reason. I played all the way to the last boss.
Did you win?
No, I never beat him. It was too hard.
It's too hard.
Too hard. I didn't feel like grinding, doing the same thing I had done previously, so I could get high enough to beat him.
Right.
And
you can get high without doing any of those things.
Sure. So I played some of Ultima, also on the NES, right? Clearly not the true version, because it came out on the PC and was already on, like, version 6 by the time it came out on the NES.
Right.
But that was my console of choice. And didn't do much for me, and that was it. I'm pretty sure, like... I mean, unless you include the Zelda games, which are a very different style of game.
No!
It's okay, so, Rich, how about for yourself?
Like, the very first RPG that I've, like, played / had a controller and press buttons on.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy? But you disappoint
me.
Well,
I mean, dude, I was born in 86. You have to understand this.
Yeah, but like,
you're like, what, like 5 years old?
Where I fully understood that I was playing an RPG, I don't know.
Okay, so here's where I'm going with all this, you guys. My first few exposures to RPGs were... You know, obviously before the Nintendo days, right? Before the JRPGs, you know, because those came later... On, like, how many years, Bart, would you say? I mean, Matt?
I was between Wizard's Crown and Dragon's Forge?
No, I mean, between, let's say, you know, the start of the CRPGs and when, like, JRPGs actually came on.
I guess the CRPGs had a several years lead on them, because I don't think there was a few console RPGs for the Atari that era. But I just, you know, they didn't really get started until the Nintendo.
But it was, I mean...
In the U.S., I would say. So you're probably looking at, about 85, 86, somewhere in there, maybe.
Right. So there were a good several years of computer role-playing games before we even saw any JRPGs. Right?
Yeah, well, you started having CRPGs in 79.
Right, so, like, even by that time, right, by the time that we first saw our Final Fantasies and, you know, our Dragon Warriors, you know, there had been, I mean, this was already a developed genre. Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
So here's the funny thing, right? The first few exposures I had, I don't know, I think that one time a long time ago, I was on this weird bulletin board and I played this roguelike game. Which, I don't know what it was. It might have been some kind of, like, version of NetHack or something.
You mean, like, on a BBS?
So for people who don't know what we're talking about, basically, it's just, like, this dungeon-crawling game where all the graphics are ASCII graphics. And I just remember I took about, I don't know, maybe 20 steps total, and then I died. So I was like, okay, F this.
You know, I did that too, but it was later in life. Like, after the Super Nintendo had already come out and I'd played stuff on the NES, I discovered... like BBSs and the internet and all that.
So I was like, and it wasn't just, oh, I made this horrible tactical error. It was just, I'm just minding my own business, and then I died. So, and then I played Bard's Tale once. I don't remember on what platform, but same kind of thing. You know, took a few steps, found some monsters, and then I died. I also had like an Apple IIgs at the time, and John Carmack actually got his start writing RPGs on the 2GS. And so I played one of his games, found some monsters, and then I died.
Now, unfortunately, Matt, I'm sorry, we didn't give you a lot of opportunity to speak here. I have a lot of questions for you as soon as we come back. So stay with us. We'll come back with Matt Barton as soon as we come back from the break.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
And we're back. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. If you want to head over to our live chat room, get to chatterboxgameshow.com or just chatterboxers.com if that's easier for you. Got the live chat room there. And we've got Matt Barton, author of Desktops and Dungeons, which is sort of an explanation of just computer role-playing games, right? And the history of computer role-playing games. R and I each have a question that we'd like to delve into, so we're going to let Matt do a little bit more speaking this time. So I'm going to leave it over to R.
So I get excited sometimes, so sorry for not giving you an opportunity to talk last segment.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Anyway, what I was leading up to, my point was that, at least for me, I felt like my butt was getting kicked repeatedly, and so I gave up on these games. So my question to you is, what was the attraction? Because obviously, it was a whole industry of these games, and they were very, very successful, many of them. What's the attraction to them?
Well, I think that's kind of part of the attraction, actually. I remember the first few times I tried the Bard's Tale. It's a lot of work creating all those characters, and then you try to get across the road to a place where you buy your arms and armor, and you get killed by a random group of kobolds or something like that. And, you know, that kind of pisses you off, but if you go back in there enough times, and finally you start to level up your characters, and then you find that you can really kick some butt later in the game, I think that's kind of part of the attraction. Hey, I can really lay the smackdown on these guys that were killing me just a few hours before, or days before,
so,
as the case may be.
So why do you think that there was such a high level of patience? Is it because of, you know, maybe the type of people that played these games, or maybe something else?
I think it's probably the type of people that played them. Sure, these weren't people that were just going to quit right away.
That was me.
I quit, quit in disgust, Fool of Radiance. First few times I tried to play that and came back to it weeks later and just said, you know what, I'm going to find a way to play this. I don't know, maybe it's a masochistic tendencies to some degree, I don't know, but you really have that desire to conquer the game, and you know it's not going to be easy.
See, now what you said a second ago really... It interests me. I hadn't thought about this, but you're right. Like, you play a role-playing game, and you get your butt kicked by whatever dude. And that's, like I said, the end of Dragon Warrior. I got to the last dragon guy, and I didn't beat him. And I could have leveled up and leveled up and leveled up just to beat him. So you're saying that the attraction is basically, or potentially, that you want to overcome that next challenge, right? But I realize that the actual gameplay involved is doing something repeatedly that is very easy, which is the grinding until you're at a big enough level where you then just beat someone else that you couldn't beat before very easily. And so you're either doing something that's way too hard and getting your butt kicked, or doing a whole bunch of stuff that's way too easy, and then I wonder,
kicking everyone else's butt.
Yeah, like, why is I need to know why that's fun. Is it just because you finally did it? Like, is that the reward?
I think it might be too. If you think about a game like Space Invaders, or any of those sorts of games, I mean, you're fighting lots of, you're killing lots of enemies, but you don't really get anything for that. You know, your ship doesn't change. I mean, I guess you get more score. But with these games, you feel like every time you hit one of those little random encounters, your characters get a little bit better. They're just sort of slow. It's like little baby steps. Each encounter is a baby step towards that goal. And I think that's probably part of it.
So you think the experience points and leveling up is one of the huge major components of a role-playing game?
I think that's what defines a role-playing game.
See, now this... That leads into Rich's question. He's bugging us to ask you this.
I have to ask this.
I mentioned earlier Legend of Zelda. Do you consider Legend of Zelda to be a role-playing game?
Yeah, I figured that this question might come up.
You need to answer this correctly, by the way.
Well,
don't mind him. He's just ornery.
I mean, part of me wants to say, sure, you know, since it's such a popular game, it'd be nice to classify that as a role-playing game, and then... you make it sound like the genre is a lot bigger. But, you know, at least the first game doesn't really have a leveling system. It's more action-based to me. If you look at the second game, Zelda 2, that seems to be more of a role-playing game.
Because of the random battles and the leveling. Is there leveling in Zelda 2, or am I confusing?
Yeah, totally leveling.
2 has leveling.
But, you know, then again, isn't Zelda 2 sort of the black sheep of the family, right?
Well, exactly. I don't know how many of our listeners remember it, but
I thought it was a flippin' awesome game.
I didn't.
So I don't know. I don't understand where this criticism comes from. I thought it was great.
I've said many times on the show that Nintendo, in the age of the 8-bit Nintendo, it was very common that you would have a successful game, they would want to turn it into a franchise, they'd go into their second version, and it would be drastically different. They would realize that nobody liked the second one. They liked the first one.
Yeah, I don't
know. Now go back to the gameplay of the first one in number 3. Castlevania did it. Zelda did it. Mario did it.
I don't know. Yep. Love to hit enemies and see numbers come out. That's all I have to say.
Not me.
Well,
so
in the original Zelda, I guess you got more hearts as you went along, right? More.
That was Rich's
and I
own
think
life.
I think that's the people's arguments, is like you get hearts in like different weapons as you go through the game. Mm-hmm. But like Zelda 2 is the only one that's actually an RPG, in my opinion, and the rest of them are action-adventure games. And it really bothers me personally when people categorize Legend of Zelda games as RPGs.
Is it going to bother you when I start...
Action-adventure. I think, action-adventure may make more sense.
Because it'd be like saying God of War is an RPG, but it's clearly not.
Yeah, I mean, we're all in agreement here, but Rich gets upset when people misclassify his donuts. So.
They can't call it an RPG.
All right.
Well, you know, it has a lot in common with RPGs, there's no doubt about it. Fantasy setting. Magic, fairy tale type structure. It just doesn't have that critical leveling component.
See, you know what? For me, though, the definition of a role-playing game has always included a lot of boring gameplay. That's what it is. Like, if the game is not fun, it could quite possibly be an RPG. And I don't want you to take this the wrong way, Matt, but when you are given an enemy randomly, which I never liked, but then your option is a text choice of whether or not to fight or throw magic, perform magic, or like run. Like, that always seemed anticlimactic to me. And the newer games are actually becoming a little bit more interesting. Like Final Fantasies have delved into different types of mechanics. The Penny Arcade game copied off of that too. And lots of games that I just don't know because I don't play them, where it's a lot more timing based. And sometimes you even actually like do like a Street Fighter style move in the middle of the battle. So they try to liven it up and bring a little bit more action element to these role-playing games. But for the most part, it's still like random encounters. One guy strikes, one guy defends, another guy in your party strikes, another guy defends. Which leads me to believe that the intrigue of these games is more often the story rather than the actual gameplay. Has that seemed to be the case as the games progress? Have the stories gotten thicker and thicker to the point that it's really just like reading a novel?
Well, you know, I've seen a lot of back and forth movements. You're talking about Wizard's Crown earlier. That's a very I'd almost call that a tactical RPG. It's such a large party, and you have so many different kinds of moves you could execute. It's turn-based. And then a game like Diablo, which to me is definitely more action-oriented there.
Definitely.
And then, you know, I just got finished playing a Mass Effect.
Rich is a big fan of Mass Effect.
Dude, BioWare's awesome.
I really, really liked it. I think that's probably the direction that at least the single-player RPGs are going to go. because you did have that. You had a really good story, good characters, and you could also do. You could have a lot of action scenes that would be hard to have in a multiplayer online game.
So now, my big question is that we, like I said, like I think these games are moving over just to be story based, and that I think is the intrigue. And the gameplay, like one of our listeners, Pen15, was putting in the chat room that these games aren't difficult to actually play. It's just basically a question of your patience and grinding through. And there is interest in seeing your character level up, but it's not like playing a fighting game where you, the player, become more advanced. And although the character you're using could have done the cool stuff you're doing now after playing for 20 hours on minute one, it's only because you've learned how to master it that it's become more interesting. And anyway, this leads into another question of mine that I'm going to save till after the break because the music's here. So stay with us. We'll bring you out to the last segment of the show, and that'll be it. Stay tuned, everybody.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio,
sponsored by University of Advancing Technology.
You got it. You got it.
UAT.edu.
All right, we've got Matt Barton with us, author of Dungeons and Desktops.
Now I'm going to continue what I was saying. Matt, you're
continue.
There, right?
Oh yeah, I'm here.
All right, fantastic. So I was talking about the progression of role playing games as pertains to storyline. Right, they get more involved, and of course there are tactical RPGs, like you said, and a lot of games have story, whether or not they're RPGs. But one thing I was questioning is, well, first of all, I assume you were a pen and paper role-playing game player prior to computer RPG games and possibly even throughout their evolution. Is that right?
Oh, actually, no. I didn't I didn't come to the pen and paper games until much later.
All right, but you have some experience with them?
Yeah, I have some experience.
All right. And I would gather, and remember, I'm not a player of either one of them. I have, you know, dabbled a little bit in each, but essentially not so much. I gather that the draw is very, very different. Like pen and paper, very social, and also has no predetermined storyline, whereas the computer games have a very assigned storyline. I mean, you might have side quests and whatever, but it's got a single storyline that essentially, I mean, it allows it to be single player and be a finite experience. And I'm curious if how you think that changes the entertainment or the reason for playing the game for the player, right? When they played pen and paper, which is what all these computer RPG games were based off of, but it was a very, very different experience.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. The tabletop game, it's a very social. People like to put on accents and things of that sort. And the dungeon master, if he or she is any good, can sort of model the story on the fly, just depending on what the characters or players want to do. That seemed to be really difficult to translate to a computer-based experience. You could go the text adventure route, but then you know, like you said, you had to have just that one story and those one sets of puzzles. So once you figured out how to solve the puzzles, the game doesn't have any replay value.
Yeah.
But then what? What, you know, Garriott, people like that were thinking, well, why don't we just have sort of put combats in there and leveling and sort of the numerical, statistical type aspects from Dungeons & Dragons, and that really worked well on the computer. But you really didn't have that social dimension until, I don't think you really got anything like that until recently with the MUDs earlier. But then also with the massive multiplayer games.
Yeah, and that's what we were talking about at the very beginning of the show, which I don't know if you heard, how there was this, you know, this transition from paper and pen to computer, which was a social experience to a single-player experience, and now it seems to be back into the social experience of the MMOs, where, I mean, it might not be you and three or four friends, it might be you and, like, 50 people you don't know very well, but still, I think the draw to the game, the reason that someone decides to go do that rather than, you know, watch the new episode of Heroes or eat a big bowl of cornflakes is because, you know, they want to meet up with certain people and experience, you know, whatever experience they're having in this game with a lot of other people. And so the drive to play the game is very different, which means it's now also leading away from story and back into the social element. And like, what's strange is, I guess, the pen and paper seem to be the purest form of this, because you could have a story, if, like you said, there was a good DM, then you could have a good story, even though it wasn't really set in stone. But now it's... I mean, are there any MMOs that really have an interesting story?
No.
Rich.
let the expert answer.
No. The answer's no.
We haven't.
We'll see what Matt has to say about
that. That is the weakness. That's the big weakness of the multiplayer games. I know that's what Tabula Rasa, every sort of new massive game that comes out, they're trying to say, well, this will be the one with story. It just doesn't really seem to have panned out. It's precisely that reason. How can you have all those people going through the same story? Just sort of logistically impossible.
And so do you have one? I mean, let's group these into three areas, right, where you've got the MMOs, the newest one, and then the single-player RPGs, and then the pen and paper. Is there one that stands out to you as better than the rest?
Better? Well, I like the single-player ones the best. The single-player computer games. Those have always been my favorite, although I guess probably second. I do like the MUDs and the multiplayer online games, but they're just very different kinds of experiences.
Yeah. Now, Ara, you had... We only have a few minutes left, and that was a question you thought was really important, so I'm just going to switch gears a little bit.
Yes. Oh, that's so kind of you. So here's I think, a little hot topic that we can discuss for a few minutes.
Remember, we only have about 3 minutes left.
Which is all we have. So I'll just say it. Are RPGs dangerous to social health? I think you guys know where
that
I'm getting
nice
at with
segue.
This. Look, sometimes...
Continue.
Sometimes...
Ignore me.
Okay. So let's hear what you have to say about this. Go for it, Matt.
I mean, they've always... They said the same thing about Dungeons & Dragons. You had the kid in the steam tunnels. And it turned out to be a hoax. People that get it so addicted to it, they... divorce their wives or whatever it is. I think those people probably had problems before they ever played these games. Maybe the game exacerbated it somehow. I actually see a lot more benefits than things to be worried about. Especially with some of these more complicated games like the World of Warcraft or. Even Mass Effect, just about any role-playing game you want to mention, there's so many factors that you have to manage. You're managing resources, you're developing characters, you're following a storyline. If you're in World of Warcraft, you might be collaborating with a group. You might be leading a group, socializing. I see all those as really nice benefits, a lot more than I do anything to be worried about.
Now, those are certainly good positive qualities, but most of my exposure to things like World of Warcraft is, hey, you want to go do something? Oh, no, man, I got to go do a raid at 5:30. Sorry.
Well, they're just prioritizing your time.
Indeed. And actually, the other reason why I ask is...
I know what you mean about that, though.
What's that?
I follow you. I hear you. That's a... And one reason I don't play World of Warcraft as much now.
It's interesting because some of the games that I've played, like Morrowind or Oblivion, I've put in... I mean, those are fantastic games. I love them. And at the same time, I have this kind of disdain just for the fact that sometimes I look back and I'm thinking, wow, I put in 200 hours and and what has this accomplished?
Well, I mean, if you hadn't been playing that game, I mean, what would you have been doing?
Yes.
Playing and driving
that's
game.
Working on a Nobel Prize.
That's a fantastic point, actually. There's really nothing I can say to
You would have just been
that.
Playing a racing game.
Camping,
Or, maybe a more boring RPG where I don't get points.
You could have been developing your dungeon mastering skills.
I could have been doing that.
Paper game.
This is true.
Although, vice president,
I mean,
anyone can do that.
The Nobel Prize sounds very enticing as well, I have to admit.
All right. Well, we're coming on the end of the show. I'm certainly happy that you're able to join us, Matt. I appreciate it. I'll put up a link
Thank
on our
you
website.
For having me.
Hey, no problem. Now, do you have any other books or anything else that we would want to promote while we've got you here? Is this the only one we should be discussing?
Well, I am working on a new book with my colleague Bill LaJudas from Armchair Arcade. This was going to be called Vintage Games, an insider's look at the most influential games ever made. So there we're going a lot. We're talking about all kinds of games. We've got 32 of the games that we consider to be the most influential of all time.
All right. Well, I will.
That might be something to look at.
I'll tell everybody to keep an eye out for it. I'll put a link up to the book that we discussed today, so that people can pick that up if they'd like. Certainly appreciate you coming on the show. Don't forget, head over to chatterboxgameshow.com if you want to learn more about our show, or email Ara or I at Ara at Chatterbox Game Show or Alon at Chatterbox Game Show. And that's pretty much it. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.